Jesus then said to those Jews who believed on him, if you continue in my word, then are you my disciples indeed. Now, of course, that means learning. Now, this is the first point I really want to bear out, and bear it out very clearly, where people make so many mistakes in life. The worst mistake you can make in your life is trying to make it work. And the whole world is running around trying to make human life work. And they haven't been able to get the answer to it. What Jesus said here, if you follow my way, in my word, a way of living, he said, then what you are, you notice he didn't say you're going to have the answers to everything. He said, then what you are a learner. That's what you are. And here's where people get confused. And until you understand the purpose for human existence, you will totally miss the point of religion. Your religion will amount to nothing unless you understand the purpose for human life. And everyone runs around thinking that human life is something you're supposed to make work. And it doesn't work. What human life, the experience is supposed to do, is to train. It's to teach. Human life was never intended to work in this world. And everyone's running around trying to make it work. And that's why they look up to astrology things and say, what can I do today and not do? Because then it'll work. It's like if you go to the EXP, I've studied in a lot of this there, so I know what I'm talking about. They do what they do, they hit a group of people today. And it costs about $150 or $200 for 3 days. And they lock you up in a room. And you aren't even permitted to get up and leave to use the restroom. For during those periods of time. The one that's got to sit until that day is over, the next day and the next day. And all they're trying to do, you know what they're trying to do? One thing. They try to break down through the ego of the individual to make them understand one thing. What reality is. Just to really face reality. The EST in the Latin means it is. In fact, if you ask these people when they finish this today, and they leave this seminar, and they all feel enriched, what usually the Middle Eastern religions they call awareness. They feel the more aware of life, and they say, well, what did it do? I don't know. Well, did it help you? I feel better. Well, why do you feel better? Well, it just did. But they don't understand what happened was if they took the first step to actually acknowledging some truths about themselves. It's almost a false system of retention. And they don't know why, they just feel better, and they don't know why. Now, I'm telling you, these are real things. And at the point that I want you to understand, religion has to resolve the real true issue of life, or it's not true religion. Now, when Jesus here said very plainly, in verse 31, he said, if you follow my way of life, you're going to be a learner. And verse 32, he said, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. That's plain. So what it's telling us here, if you really want true religion, it must be a religion that literally sets you free. It really must do that. Now, free from what? Well, it tells you a little further down, sin. So it sets you free from sin because it's sin that causes all the problems that you're trying to resolve. But I want you to see some of the problems you're trying to resolve. Let's really honestly look at some of the questions. And see if you are confronted in many cases with these problems, and you just can't seem to be able to cope. You can't seem to be able to handle it. Let's note first Matthew 6 and verse 31. Matthew 6 and verse 31, where Jesus first mentions that there's more to life than this human existence. And he talks about a life that's certainly a lot finer than this one. And then he makes a statement about people who don't have the information about God and God's truth and what they seek at. And then you have to see if you do the same thing, because if you do, you're never going to get the answer. Matthew 6:31, Jesus said, therefore, take no thought or over anxiousness, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or whether shall we be clothed? For after all these things do the heathen, and that's specifically referring to people who are lacking in the knowledge of God. The heathen seek, or Gentiles, for your heavenly Father knows that you have need of all these things. Now, very simply, I just take a catechism that's very simple. If we didn't let you live, I'm just going to say the same time. We didn't let you eat. For 3 days, I can guarantee you I know just what you'd be worried about. Right? Or not? You can read the scriptures, and I want to deal with truth in your sermon. Absolute truth. Because without truth, you're not going to get anything out of it. You can read this scripture and you say, well, yes. Now, Christians are not supposed to be thinking about survival. So it's talking about eating, drinking, shelter, safety. Isn't that what it's talking about? You say, yeah, that's not Christian, so therefore, I better not do that. And so then he proceeds to do it. Isn't that correct? If you don't believe in him, you're something I'm not. I'm still human. And this is the problem that has to be answered. I mean, it's real. Listen, 30 days from now, you've got a warning that at the end of 90 days, someone's going to visit you. And you're going to be very much concerned about it. Right? Okay. Now, even true religion answers that question, or it's not true religion. And that's what he said. He said, don't worry about it. Your Father knows that you're going to need this thing. Now, how do you answer that question? We're going to answer it. I want you to see another problem that you work with. In Matthew 25, verses 24 to 25. Matthew 25, verses 24 and 25. Probably more people suffer from this in the whole world than any other problem. You can see it written on their faces. I've gone into intensive studies on this question. And it's a direct need for man, and man has to have an answer. It's what he learned about. It's talking about the individual very plainly who's afraid of failing. It's the whole question of human success and failure. And here Jesus talks about this one individual, which depicts, frankly, most people. Most people have not come to the place and developed anywhere near to what they were given at birth. All because of fear of failure, just as much as fear of survival. And of course, there's the account before Christ of this individual who took this talent or this potential ability and buried it. Now notice his attitude. Then, verse 24, he which had received the one talent came and said, Lord, I knew you, that you are a hard man, reaping where you have not sown and gathering where you have not strong. And I was afraid and went and hid your talent in the earth, and lo, there you have that is yours. In other words, the person was simply afraid to try it. He's afraid to go to rule. He's going to fail. Most people in the world are that way. Children registered on their faces, they experience it the first day they go to school and have to have an identification with their own peer group. So even true religion resolves that question, or it isn't the truth. So the problem of merely coping with success and failure is a real problem that religion has to answer. And I want you to see another one in 2 Corinthians 10, verse 18. I'm first going to load the problem down. Then we'll get into the solution. 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 18. And here's the account. And when you come to the church, this is part of your human nature, just as much as people outside, because we're all human. And what we seek is approval. That's what you seek. Children seek parents' approval with their children. And then when they grow up, they seek peer approval. And then finally, approval of whatever they go into. So there's a deep need requirement of human beings to be approved. And so when people in the church, in all the congregations, people like to be approved or accepted within the congregation where they feel rejected. And so in verse 18, Paul says, for not he who commends himself is approved, but whom the Lord commends. Now, I'm telling you, this is the problem the whole world has. These are real life issues. You want to talk about God. These are real issues. Your marriage problems, your career problems, your problems socially with each other, your problems with yourself, all surround these questions. Now I want to come to the ultimate problem that man has in Hebrews 9 and verse 27. Hebrews 9 and verse 27. And we're going to address these questions very clearly by the truth that will set you free. Hebrews 9 and verse 27, the ultimate reality that every human being must face. Paul said, and as it is appointed or decreed unto men once to die, but after it to judgment. How do you handle death? You know, when you're young, you're full of vitality and strong, you're not too concerned about it. But you know something? I remember when I was a teenager, the first experience of someone close to me dying, my grandmother died. And I remember the shock it was to me. And I remember at the funeral, it upset my mother so much, she jumped into the grave when they were lowering the coffin. Now, this is a question people don't like to talk about. But you know, you're going to confront it. And not once in your life. You're going to confront that question many times in your life. And ultimately, your own. True? You better believe it. Now, that's why people are not getting the answers to those questions in religion, and they're looking for it someplace else. And even the truth is the truth, and it sets you free, or else we're wrong. And we have to know. Well, look what Christ does by following his way of life, how his truth sets us free, so we can realize and learn. I want you to notice first Matthew 10 and verse 39. Matthew 10 and verse 39. Jesus made a very plain statement, and these are truths. And until we become that truth, we are not free. You see, it's one thing to know the truth and to make it free, but it's another thing to live in it and become that truth so it sets you free. Jesus answers the questions that I just gave you. He gives you the answer. And the interesting thing is this, you can't play religion. If the religion is true, you either become that truth or else it doesn't work. In fact, it can destroy you. Do you know in a mental institution, if they find an individual who's gone either neurotic or paranoid or psychotic or schizophrenic, and especially if there are people who are just surrounding themselves with the Bible, you know what the first thing they do with those people? They take the Bible away from them. You know, I had visited people in institutions where I saw they were having a true real mental problem. I'm not talking about people maybe who are there or shouldn't be there. But I'm talking about people that are very obviously having a real mental problem. And when I talk with them about studying the Bible, and I see that the truth of God is what's changed, I tell them not to read it. I tell them to leave it alone. They can't handle it. We're not talking about something you try and you play with. We're talking about a reality that actually will actually make you live or die. Now let me show you how important it is. Look, notice in verse 39. Jesus meant this statement. He said, he who finds his life shall lose it. So if you try to make this life work, you lose. You lose. It can't work. I'm telling you, it can't work. In this world, this life cannot work. And everybody's running around trying to make it work. And then they get more and more frustrated, and everybody finds little answer here, a little answer there, a piece over there, a piece over here, but it never is all together. Now, if you're caught in that syndrome, then you're not continuing in Christ's Word. Now, if you read this, you say, he defines his life to lose it, and you have to say, well, I've got to quit finding my life in this world. And you proceed to try to find it. You can't role play, and we're going to get into that. There's a lot of problems with people and nothing more than we role play. Alright, so first thing you have to understand about the truth is is that you have to understand the first principle of human life in this world is very simple. It won't work. And until you stop trying to make it work, you're going to have trouble. And you'll never make it work until you stop trying to make it work. You see, because what Jesus said in the latter part, and he who loses his life for my sake shall find it. What you've got to do is you've got to concentrate on the area that Jesus said to concentrate. Then you make this life turn out. And you will conquer those problems I'm talking about realistically. I'm not talking about some ethereal fluff in the sky. I'm talking about how it really will work. Now, look. Very simple. If something doesn't work in the world, what do they do? If marriage doesn't work, okay? And today, it's in question. The question today is marriage obsolete? You know, it's a real question. You know what they really mean? Is it doesn't work. And you know what you do when it doesn't work? You don't marry anymore. Simple.
Yeah.
And now you just don't marry. The whole marriage institution is in doubt. And so now we don't marry. How about having children? That's trouble. Right? Parent-child relations, generation gaps, the whole thing. You know, it doesn't work. So you know the answer is very simple. We don't have children anymore.
Yeah.
Isn't that where it's going? And so what's the end result? Why, in about 3-4 generations, if we get them sold enough, you won't have to worry about humanity anymore. There won't be any. Very simple, isn't it? Very easy. Problem that we do is how? You just don't. See, the point is, this Christ said that if you follow my word, or my word, you are my learner. So this human life was created not to work, but to train. Your marriage is a training ground. Your relationship with your children is a training ground. And everybody's running around trying to make it work instead of getting taught. Instead of really being trained and learning and being a disciple and learning from it and understanding that, everyone runs around trying to make it work. If it doesn't work, I quit. I'm going to take my marble home and play my own marble game. This is how people are. Because they don't understand the first point of the Trinity, and that's that human life in this world is not intended to work, it was merely intended to be a training ground. And until you face that reality first, you will not be free. Until every human life experience to you becomes a learning experience, an obstacle that must be handled, an obstacle that you have to learn how to cope with, and I don't mean a cop-out. Cop-out is nothing more than becoming an alcoholic, a person who becomes a coffee-holic, a workaholic, a loafaholic. Anything you try to escape with, to not confront the truth. And the only thing that will set you free is truth. That's all. Drugs, you name it. These are all cop-outs. You know, I'll say, the people argue about it. To smoke or not to smoke? That is the question. You know, I can't find in the Bible where it says, light up a vice rock. You know, if they never said a word in the Bible about smoking at all, I wouldn't do it just because it stinks. I mean, the first question you have to ask yourself, why smoke? And if the only reason is a cop-out, then there is no other reason. Smoking isn't something that you take and you say, this tastes like vanilla. Smoking is when you first say to Bob, what is it? What is it? I remember the first time my wife wanted to teach her two children about smoking. And there was just a tiny little run at that time. Now we're getting to run. And that was very simple. I don't know, they were about 8 years old, nine, something like that, and they were driving by, and they saw an ad, I guess, it was one of these billboards, and it had six cigarettes on it. And he was a little girl, and his wife said, "I wonder what that says about it." My wife said, "You want to smoke?" You know, my wife, you don't say things like that. "You want to smoke?" "No, no, 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 we don't want to smoke." "Come on, you're going to smoke." Let's go to the gas station. That's the gas station attendant. He had a cigarette. And he had one, he had him right up. "I said, how much you smoke yet?" And I said, "Yes, yes!" "You want to smoke?" "No." That's what they call truth. I thought the point was simply this. If you make life a cop-out, any excuse to cop-out, you're refusing to be trained by. So when I see something as a cop-out, I've got to either find a different place that I face the reality, and I accept the truth of it, and I quit it. I don't conquer. Now, how does it happen? Now, how many of you people have ever heard where, you know, they say, "Oh, the only reason he changed is because he had a crisis." Right? It's the only way anything changes.
Yeah.
I want you to notice that verse at the end. This is part of the procedure. You know, God instituted the methods and how to train you. And everybody fights it. "I want it, but I won't do it."
Yeah.
Verse 38, "And he who takes not his trial or his crisis or cross and follows after me is not worthy of me." Why aren't you worthy of him? Very simple. If you don't do it, you don't get changed. It's that plain. You know, they have found out in dealing with alcoholics and drug addicts, you know what they used to do? They set all kinds of films. They still do it in some schools that don't know that. And what they do is they show all the films on the abuse of drugs and alcohol. Right? You know what it does? It makes them drink more and use more drugs. You know, it's just like, hey, you have a mate who has an alcohol problem, and they come home drunk. And he said, "John, you've got to stop it. This drinking is going to take you to the grave. And me and the kids, too." He already knows that. He knows. What you should do is he comes home drunk and falls down on the front porch and nauseates all over the porch. And then you open the door, oh, there he is again. You leave him out there and go to bed. And then in the morning when he's out there like this, starting getting up and the neighbors starting to go to work, you see how quickly he'll get into the house. You're really moved. That was a crisis. You cannot educate people out of their problems. I cannot educate you into the truth. All I can do is preach it. You have to listen. And the way people change very simply is that times of crisis, and that's what they found out with the drugs and the alcohol, that when the change comes, it's not the interference of some person, but when there is a personal crisis that has hit that individual of wisdom. This is what Jesus is saying. He's saying very simply, because living the truth in this life is a training experience, and not an experience to make it work in this world, but a training experience, and I move you from one base to the other base and train you and work you and change you through crises or suffering. That's how it happens. That's the way it is. And it's your ability to accept the reality of it that sets you free. Not talking to yourself mentally, but actually understanding and living. That's how it happens. I want you to try just a little experiment. Now, you can do it if you like, you don't, you know, you can remain seated. But if you'd like to just try this, just everybody would like to stand up right now. Just stand up. Thank you.
Just that little bit of change that I caused in your life, and then you had no question at all. I was in psychic in crisis, and I guarantee you this, if I would have walked off the stage and left, in time you would have left too. Okay. That's how it works. This is the way that you breathe. And you've got to understand that. When people marry, and if they get married and think they just have been becoming husband and wife, and it's a proverbial Hollywood romantic picture running off into the sunset, you're missing the whole lesson. The entire lesson of the marital experience, the learning relationship of training for what it would be like in the kingdom when we're married with Christ, because now we are trained. And so every time it doesn't work, I quit. You're going to be a quitter all your life. You're going to do nothing more than take that talent and bury it. You're going to bury it and you'll learn zip. That's exactly what Christ is trying to tell you. Now, remember, I read a recent research case that I went through. On stress. And the world today is really confronted with the problem of stress. And they found that basically people fall into two categories. There are three types of people. There's what you call the power achiever, and then there's the growth achiever, and then you have the problem achiever. All right, now the power achiever is a person who attempts to achieve whatever they want in their lives through the desire of wanting power, whether it's conscious or whether it's not conscious, you know, whether it's subconscious and they aren't aware of it. But if the real reason they're trying to achieve what they're trying to achieve is the feeling of being something, of having that power, they have the highest level of stress. These are the type A people. They are literally the people who have the high blood pressure, the heart attack, and so forth. Doesn't mean everyone who does that is that problem. But those people tend to be that way, and on a stress scale, these people literally have the highest stress ratio. They really do. And we usually think of the, you know, the big business executive, the chairman of the board, cool, collected, and inside the thermometer, boy, but he never shows it. And he's really the real key thing is power. That person's blood pressure is a real problem. Alright? I'm going to take the third category first. The third category is the problem achiever. This is the person who is apathetic. The lukewarm person. They have the least amount of pressure of all the groups. Hardly any tension. No tension at all. There are always usually people who are very good at understanding why nothing can work. They're very good with that. And they're generally very, you know, just apathetic. The only problem is no tension, but there's no growth. Absolute zero growth. That's the Matthew 24 in the Hebrew. I mean, Matthew 25, 24, okay? Now, very interesting. The one who is a growth achiever, who is not achieving for power, or not trying to achieve just for problems, but is the growth achiever for development as a human being of service. They also have stress, but it's a lot lower than the power achievers, and it's higher than the problem achievers. In other words, it's the right ratio. You need tension to have action. Without tension, there is no action. But if tension develops to the level that it hits your stress level, you break. So the person motivated by power for achievement has the highest stress, has no growth, accomplishes a lot, and dies of heart attacks. The problem achiever has no stress. And what they work on is they try to do two things. How to eliminate obstacles and how to avoid obstacles.
Yes.
And they spend their whole life on those two things. Now, obviously, you can't grow Because it's the crisis or the obstacle that's supposed to train you. And if all you're trying to do is avoid the obstacle or eliminate the obstacle, you never grow. And you're always afraid. You're afraid of death? I thought I was going to be here today. I flew out of Reno yesterday, the Earth. And the plane started taking off and we were in Las Vegas because that was the only plane I could pick up in connection to get there. And as we started to get up into the air and I could see Lake Tahoe, I thought this airplane was going up very, very slowly. And I've been on so many of them, I know just how they're supposed to go up. And the thing was up, I thought, this is not what I'm used to. And all of a sudden it started turning around. I said, this is the wrong way to Las Vegas. It was going directly back to Reno. And sure enough, the stewardess goes into the pilot's cabin. And the next thing she comes out, she has this look, you know, she role plays. She's trying to be 747, airport 75, you know. And she calls the other stewardesses over. And they come over and all of a sudden they're on. If you all please fasten your seatbelt, we're returning to Reno. The pilot will explain it when we land. You know, the funny thing is about the king of the mountain, because he went, you know, he didn't pray like the usual, he was slow, he went, you know, nothing. And I thought, how do you stop it? And I thought to myself, is it over already? And I thought, I'm just beginning to learn. And you know, the first thing you wonder when death sort of is going to knock at the door, what you think about. And funny thought that came into my mind was first, is it over already? And I'm just learning what I'm just beginning to learn even what human life is about. Just started. When I think of how little I knew for the last 1,000 years. Makes me realize how little I know from here. I really thought that. And I had confronted that issue. Of course, we did land. And what turned out to be is there was some electrical fire that started in the airplane. And of course, they didn't tell you. No, they don't tell you. I thought that it was a bomb. They evacuated us quickly out of the airplane, got the firemen in there, and the whole thing. I sat around the airport for 2-3 hours, waiting for another plane that didn't get here until 9 o'clock at night last night. But it's amazing. When you're confronted with the realistic issue, and you can't play role anymore, either I accepted the training of the experience or I couldn't cope. You see, you're going to have to learn how to cope with life with its problems that are insoluble in this world. You know, it's interesting. When you're first born as a child, you have the most energy and vitality. You're bubbling. And when you get older, you usually make the statement, you say, if I only had the same energy like when I was young. Right? What I know now, and if I didn't have that energy. In any training process, as people are living the process, as you train, obstacles must get harder to train more. And so when you start out as a child, and the more you get to the elderly ages, when you start to lose some of your physical strength and stamina, maybe a little bit of hearing or eyesight and other physical problems, that doesn't mean a cop-out, that means you've got to train harder. That means you started out as a kid knowing the least that you need the most strength and energy to make it.
Yeah.
That's what you need. And so as you get older, it's harder to do. Just weight control is obvious, isn't it? It's a lot different to eat at 15, like my boy, than it is to eat at 35 or 50. You know, when you're 27, you're supposed to reduce your food intake by 1/3. That'll shock you. And by the time you're 35, you're supposed to reduce your income. That happens too. You reduce your food intake by 1/3. So by the time you're over 35 years of age, you should be eating about 1/3 of what you were eating before. Now, how many of you do that? Now, you see, the point is, it's going to start at this. God has created man in such a way that he is forced to face the issues and crises of reality, and you have no control over it. You're part of it, and you just cope with it and get trained. And if you don't get trained, you don't grow. That's what true religion is. No shortcuts, no quickies, no hypnotism, astrology. These are quickies. Drugs, alcohol, all quickies. But they don't change you. And that is where the problem resides. Notice in Philippians 3 and verse 11. Philippians 3 and verse 11. This is what Paul understood. It's interesting to read the life of Paul. The way he was in the beginning is opposed to the time when he was ready to go to his death. And he was ready, by the way. What I'm telling you is you're going to have to conquer death. I have to conquer death. Now, repentance and baptism and the blood of Christ removes the penalty of... The Greek word is very interesting. The Greek word is kaleos. And in the New Testament, there are three or four Greek words for the word perfect. And in different parts of the New Testament, different Greek words are used. So every time it says perfect, you cannot identify it with the same meaning. In this case, it's different. Kaleos means age. 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 It's aging. Okay, aging is synonymous with training or growing. Why is it old? So Paul said, not as though I had already attained, either were already aged, like a fine vintage wine. You ever see faces of people? And sometimes you see it in the face of people who take portraits. They take a sea captain who's weathered years on the sea. Maybe he has quite an obvious extreme nose that sticks out and some heavy lines in his face. And many times he'll be smoking a pipe or something. He's got this cap. And usually that's what the portrait would be. And you'll look and you're fascinated by the face. You see, now there's a face with character. What you're saying is there is a person who went through a lot. That's what you're saying. And every creature, every line, every wart, every little pimple distinguishes this individual as having character. What you're saying is that person went through a training phase. And that is the expression of the person that went through the wine press and has developed character. And it is attractive even though it's ugly. All right? Now, that's what we mean when we talk about age. But I follow after, he says, if that I may apprehend that for which also I am apprehended of Christ Jesus. Brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but this one thing I do. Now, here's the first thing that he brings up, that you're going to learn what such a great. First, is that life in this world is not meant to work. Secondly, that you have to realize this life is for straining. Third, he said, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forth unto those things which are before. Why? Now, very funny, let me explain this. I made an interesting study between the difference between when people are excited in life and when people are bored in life. And it's interesting. Excitement in life can only be self-initiated. Notice, no one can make your life as exciting except you. You're the only one. You might say, boy, if you had my life, you know, you'd find out differently. No, you still are the only one. Now, let me give you an example. World War II. I was in Pearl Harbor, stationed there. This was after Pearl Harbor, but I was stationed there after the attack, which was just at the end of the war. And I was in Hawaii for 2 years. And I remember I'd go on leave, and here I was standing on Waikiki Beach with all the beautiful palm trees and the rolling sweet little waves coming in, breaking on the seashore, and the balmy breeze and the smell of flowers, you know, the whole bit. And especially in the evening, I would go out with the moon rising, and this pool, beautiful, with all of this paradise of the panorama before me. And I was miserable. Now, from every aspect, I should have been excited, it should have been breathtaking, inspiring, but I'm the only one who can initiate excitement in my life. You know what the problem was? I was looking back. You know what I was thinking about? I was thinking about home. And I would rather have been in Chicago,
Then in what did he
meet? I was unhappy.
You know what I was doing? I wasn't living in reality. You see, I was living in outdated past. It was if I literally was truly living in the present, in the reality of what was, I was in a veritable paradise. I mean, I was put together in such a way as a human being by all right that if I was in a scene of such magnificence, that I should have been excited. I should have been saying, the beauty of the moon, the sweet smell of the breeze, the wonderful sound of the crashing waves. This is what I should have been doing. And I was living in outdated memories. It wasn't reality. I was living in fantasy in the streets of Chicago. You know, it's really something. Through the airplane, if you move from Swabat over here to Stanford Yellows, it amazes me still, so quickly, from one type of total terrain, completely different. This is where I am. I'm not in Swabat. I am not in Swabat, all right? I am here. This is where I am. And whether I get excited about being here or not, or any place else, depends on my ability to accept the reality of what is. Correct? Now that's what Paul learned. And he said, forgetting those things which were behind, outdated, past, it's not real. It might be like you would like it to be. You know, the way things were in the song. Well, they're not like that anymore. It's outdated. And reaching forward unto those things which were before. That's living in truth, that that sets you free. And then in Philippians 4, verse 11, Paul showed us it was a time process. And it doesn't happen at once. It takes little by little learning or aging. You have to be aged. So my wife and I are married 26 years. And we've gone from joys, happiness, sorrow, tragedy, excitement, depression, elation, right? And the longer we live together, that God allows it, the richer the experience becomes. Because we allow the relationship to train us. Train us. That's what life is about. And so Paul in verse 11 said, not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned. Now the word learned here in the Greek does not merely mean received information, but it means experienced understanding. Because not only did the learning process develop to such a place that Paul merely had information, but he actually had experienced the process of having a lot and having a little, and learned to allow it to train him. In whatsoever state I am, therewith to be content. What he was saying is that if I knew I was going to die, I can live with it. He was saying, I know that if I wasn't accepted as a person, I could live with it. And sometime I win, and sometime I fail, and I can live with it. That's what he's saying. He's talking about reality. He had come to learn and face reality. And life was doing what it was intended to do, and it was setting him free. And that's the exact thing that has to happen to you. Now I want you to notice some mistakes we make that are very obvious. In 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 12. 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 12. Here's one thing we do, and this takes years to learn. You know, have you ever wondered, how can you learn to love your enemies? That comes in two steps, by the way, that learning process. The first one is just knowledge that the Bible says so, and so you say, I've got to love my enemy, because God says I have to. All right? The second step is when you finally come to the place that you really understand your experience, there's no way you could blame them. And I don't mean in relationship to yourself. I mean people who purposely, willfully, knowingly go after you. I'm not talking about the majority who do it for ignorance. I'm talking about intended attack.
They couldn't do anything. You literally can't get to the place that you feel sorry for your enemies. I mean, it's a realistic thing that you can learn.
Now, here's one. 2 Corinthians 10, verse 12, Paul says, "For we dare not make ourselves as a number or compare ourselves with some that commend themselves, but they measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves are not wise."
It goes to this question. Is it wrong to compare yourselves?
No. If what you're comparing is equal. If what you're comparing is not equal, you cannot compare yourself, because then it is wise, because you're comparing two unequal entities. I cannot compare apples and oranges. If I were to compare and start to judge and decide, I would have to have all human beings literally come from the exact same parents under the utmost controlled conditions, and all their lives had to be controlled specifically, identically the same. Every factor would have to be exactly the same, then it would be all right to compare. But the reason you and I can't compare is we're all at different stages, at different levels, at different backgrounds of training. And that's why when you really come to know this, I mean, I just hold it. That's just misinformation. But if you let life train you, the day will come that you will understand what I'm telling you. And by understand, I merely do not mean by knowledge, I mean in your being you will experience it. You will know that other human being was a poorer human being that did what he did because of where he is. And you did not blame him. And that's what Christ has learned. And that's why he said, "Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing." Have you ever made a statement like that? How could they ever do that? Anyone in his right mind wouldn't do that. Have you ever heard that before? We've all said it. You're right. They're not in their right mind. But neither are you. That's our problem. Mr. Ted Armstrong of Squaw Valley said, "But the whole world is a little insane." And I gave a sermon after that, and I said, "I'm going to be a little more earthy about the statement. The whole world is a little crazy." And all the training ground is that the human life is experience is for us to learn how to be sane. Sane people can accept what is. People who are not sane cannot accept what it is. Now, don't you see that in 2 Timothy 1 and verse 7, the very purpose of God's Holy Spirit and what it's supposed to be doing with you and with me. 2 Timothy 1 and verse 7, where Paul said, "For God has not given us the spirit of fear, but of power," so that's ability, "and of love," and notice, "and of a sound mind." And that is an aging process. That's what Paul said, "I have not yet attained," but he's striving after that poise of Christ. A sound-minded being. And a sound-minded being can live with reality. We are nothing more than a multitude of mixtures of all kinds of hang-ups from a confused Babylonian world. You and I have come out of that, and we're in the process of becoming sane. And you know when you're there? You will be there when no longer, when survival of food, shelter, and clothing is something that causes you anxiety. You will be there where no longer, when because you're not getting the personal acceptance and approval that human beings desire, no longer really is the motivation. You will be getting there when you actually can start to look at death in a very realistic way and be ready to accept it and let it train you. That takes a pretty strong mind. Right? Okay, now, what I'm telling you simply That's what true religion does. That's what it does. It really sets you free. Now I want you to notice with me in 1 John 4 and verse 18. And you know, I just learned the meaning of this verse 3 weeks ago. I've been preaching it for 20-some years, and I just learned what it meant 3 weeks ago. What I mean is, I understood part of it, now I understand a little more. And maybe in another 2-3 years, I'll understand a little more. Okay? It literally means this. 1 John 4 and verse 18. There is no fear in love. Okay, that's a nice statement. What means that? It means fear of death goes, fear of survival goes, fear of acceptance goes, fear of failure goes. That's what it says. It says there is no fear in love. Then it defines it. But perfect love casts out fear. Now when it says cast out, it means expel it, get rid of it, right? So there is a process or a procedure that literally throws it out, gets rid of fear. Now I wouldn't doubt that some of you right here are afraid of life. Some of you right here are afraid to get into an elevator and go up and wear a head glass, and all of a sudden you look out on it and you go, woo! Okay? We're talking about fear. All it is an admission that you yet do not have perfect love. And neither do I. But I'm getting there. You know, there's an interesting book called I Ain't Well, But I'm Better. I Ain't Well, But I'm Better. You know why? This word perfect, again, is correct. So what it says is there is no fear in love, but aged or refined or fine vintage proved love casts out fear. I just learned that 2 weeks ago. Now maybe some of you knew that. Blessing on you all. I just learned and I'm grateful. Okay? All right. Because fear has torment. He who fears is not made perfect in love. If you have any fear, then you as yet, that's real stuff. I'm not playing with playing games here. I'm talking about reality. If you have any you yet do not have a love. Now don't go out and start playing. It won't work. It won't work. Don't role play. See, if you're going to grow, you've got to see the ideal of Jesus Christ. His full, mature love of what he is. That's what God is. God, by the way, has no fear. None. Okay? Here's Christ. And we read the Bible and it gives you an ideal. And everybody says, okay, I'm a Christian, I'm an ideal, I'm an ideal, I'm an ideal. You know that never works? Because you're not an ideal. And as long as you're dealing in that fantasy, it doesn't work. And it'll never work. And you'll get frustrated. And if your marriage isn't just like Christ said it should be, and you say, but I'm a Christian, I'm a Christian, I'm a Christian. My marriage is not good, it's no good, no good. It doesn't work. Well, you've got to do it in face to reality where it is. Of what your marriage, what your parent-child relationships really are, what your true career relationships really are. That's where you've got to start. And you say, this is where it is, where I really am. This is where I want to be. That's the aging process. I've got to endure, and I've got to remain faithful, and that takes the work of faith. I've got to remain faithful that God is true. And his religion is true, and it will set me free. And I have to allow every crisis in life to do its perfect work, or aging work. Okay? Then we little by little are coming up to the idea. All right, now that's what we're trying to do in the church, and also set that example for mankind through the foundation. So we want to help mankind develop. And to see what Christian life really is, and realize that Christianity is true religion, and that it does set you free, and that this is the way that God wants for man, and it's a blessing of abundance and life evermore in the kingdom to come.